Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Just cut off.
With that disclaimer, that was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly, which still carries his moniker, although he left us a little over 2 years ago, and we all miss him dearly. But we do try to preserve Brian's roundtable format of adhering to rational, gentle conversations, even though we may not always agree, and to his concept that less is more, more or less. Today, Truman O'Brien and Lynn Kerrigan are guiding us from the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, and Kevin Jones, Gail Kellner, and me, Bruce Holman, zooming in from our Vachon homes. Let me introduce and hear what's going on in the world of each of the Brieflies. Our master of the virtual mix, Zoom modulating sound engineer, treetop skimming pilot, Vachon rancher out of West Texas and Montana, guest speaker at a annual reunion of the Montana State band. I can't remember.
Oh, be careful, boy. You know,
yes, right, exactly. Yes. Is it Washington State or Washington?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's the University of Montana. And it's not an annual event. This was a special thing. I'll tell you about it. And what he's referring to is that I just got back from Missoula, Montana last week. This was, it's a long story. I'll try and make it quick. We have a band director when I was back in high school. Low those many years ago. Yeah, they did have musical instruments clear back then. But I played tenor saxophone with this group, and the band director's daughter donated a large sum of money to the University of Montana to establish an endowed professorship in her parents' name. And this was, it was a big deal. And she asked me if I would be one of the speakers at the convocation where they announced this this professorship. And so I was very honored, of course, to accept that invitation. And I spoke at the convocation. Just a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it and came out well, I thought. So anyway, I'm back and there we are.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
And it is on YouTube. So if you'd like to see Truman performing, I actually watched it.
Oh,
and,
did you?
And they have a performance of the chamber orchestra and a couple performances. And then Truman gives a very, very touching memorial to his former band director.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Well,
I appreciate
done.
That. Thank you. Yeah, well, I just have to say one quick thing. I was completely blown away by the orchestra. These are some of them are seniors who are, of course, graduating. But there's a young woman named Sylvia Wood who is just the most amazing pianist. She's evidently a pianist and a flautist and is just a graduating senior. And, amazing, amazing young woman. If you want to see a fantastic piano performance, you can look at that video. So there you go.
Sounds fabulous. Good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, out of the land of magnolias onto the island of madrones comes the analytic, academic, social worker, poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes, Lynn Kerrigan.
Good morning.
What's rocking in your world today?
Oh, I'm trying to just kind of get back to normal. I've been home sort of dealing with a minor nervous breakdown, I think. I think the winter got to be too much for me and too many things piled on. So I've been trying to just get back to the things I love and taking it easy for a little bit and trying to quit thinking about all the you know, things that are challenging us in this world now. And I think the last of my challenges, the one that put me over the edge, was that all those rains from the last couple of winters just completely shredded my backyard of topsoil and exposed all the gravel around my septic system.
Oh my God.
So I've been shoveling dirt the last month on that backyard, trying to rescue it. So it's been an interesting time.
A very Vashon issue, right?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. It just struck me. Truman's a musician. Lynn, I know you're a musician. I'm a musician. Yeah. Kevin, Gail, are you guys musicians as well? We could have our own band.
Yeah.
I can hum out a tune.
And they don't have to be long songs, right? We're the Briefleys.
Exactly. That's right. That's right. And we can wear our briefs. Oh, no, never mind. Never mind.
Well, I always say the reason why I became a painter was because I couldn't sing. But I do it anyway. I love singing. And I have taught myself a couple of instruments. And I'm currently playing with taking a Congo drum class.
So oh, cool.
Perform at some point, I think.
But, well, my there goodness. You go. There's a challenge here. That we could have the Briefleys. What would we call ourselves?
Yeah.
Hopefully it would be a brief.
Brief. Just very brief.
Briefly.
We might want to keep with that idea. Yeah,
we could add a letter and call ourselves the Barflies.
Well, there you go.
Oh, I like it.
That's right. We could. So ensconced in her family's multi-generational cabin at Sylvan Beach is futurist writer, dreamcatcher, recently published author and peripatetic poet Gail Kellner. Gail, do you have some soothing words for us during these troubled times? These times seem to be getting more troubled every day.
Yeah, I've had my own little, you know, small life worries, and so I didn't get a chance to either pen a poem or find one quite this morning. But I did want to share something about Mother's Day. Bruce, maybe you can add to this. You probably know a little bit about the origins of Mother's Day, but I learned from one of my kids over the weekend, we all got together, was that Mother's Day was not, as I thought and as she had thought, a Hallmark, originally like just a commercial Hallmark holiday, but it was actually started after the Civil War when mothers came together and they're like, you know, they came together for peace. They did not want their children being asked to kill one another and their sons being asked to kill one another. So that was kind of just a wonderful, I think that's a little soothing salve for the soul right there. Yeah, can you share more about that, Bruce?
Well, it's the power of grammar, if you will. It's where you put the apostrophe.
That's right.
Right.
Because initially it was Mother's Day, Mother's S apostrophe, so all mothers.
Yeah.
And then in 1917, you know, a descendant of one of the originators of Mother's Day moved the apostrophe to before the S, and so it became her Mother's Day for her mother. And that's what took off, and that's sort of that's what we live with today. But the original Mother's Day was sort of all mothers banding together, those who had lost husbands and sons in the Civil War, and take power out of the hands of the men who mucked it up so badly in the Civil War, and put it in the hands of women who could probably do at least not as poorly as the men did, and probably a lot better. So it's a fascinating sort of history there.
And what an interesting thing for our times, you know, that it's so applicable to what we see going on in many ways in the world right now. So anyway, okay. that kind of made my day. So that's my beam of light for you all.
I love that.
Well, never underestimate the power of punctuation.
That's right.
Reflecting on his years as a rocket scientist from his perch on top of the island above, Burton is a phantom editor of Indivisible Vashon's weekly online newsletter for your consideration, Kevin Jones. Kevin, What's happening in your world?
Hey, that's me. Good morning. I'm glad to be here. You know, Bruce, I will get to that, but you mentioned rational thought in your introduction. Are we really going to be held to that standard? I think before I go any further.
Why would we be? No one else seems to be.
Okay, very good. I'm going to go with Lynn's interpretation.
You set the bar high here.
Right? You know, you got to start somewhere. So there is a big thing on the calendar on May 14th, this Saturday from 10 to noon. It's not an indivisible Vashon conceived idea. I believe Tammy Brockway Joyce might be the phantom coordinator behind this, but reproductive rights rally at the four-way stop in town. And who doesn't believe in reproductive rights? So we all should show up and make sure that we're there to voice our support for a women's right to choose. So that's the big item coming up.
Well, that's great news.
You know, I want to, Kevin, if I'm cutting you off, my apologies, or if you wanted to say more about your life or what's happening. I was going to just say something. It's not really just even a woman's right to choose. It's really a woman's right to control over her own body in the most simplest form. That is actually the bigger issue. It's not really a right so much for me, as I see it. The choosing is a piece of that, but the bigger idea is that a woman has a right to control her own body, and that no one else should be doing that. Governments, doctors, states, any political bodies. That definitely is something that is so innate to the idea of freedom. I can't think of anything more essential.
Amen.
And it's a classic.
Well said.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a classic confrontation over interpretation of rights, you know. And once courts begin to give fetuses rights as an individual, then it sets up the conflict that we're currently in of whose rights trumps, pardon the phrase, other people's rights. You know, do my rights trump Truman's rights? When you're driving, we set up laws basically to regulate that. And here's a case where the legislature and the government and the courts have failed to give us clear sort of guidelines. And that's what this struggle's over. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out in this next election cycle.
Can I just say I have some other comments about that as well, and thank you for raising it since it's in the news so much right now and is such a critical kind of time for a vote about that. It's going to the legislature this week. I understand some of the aspects of it, but I wasn't aware we were leaping right into it right now. I thought it was later on the agenda, so I'm holding back until we get there.
Okay.
Good. All right. So I'm Bruce Hallman. I'm hosting today's show, trying to keep some order in the midst of all the chaos we're living through right now. As a historian, I try to provide a long-range view and continually remind us all that while the grinding wheels of justice may take time, they eventually grind the bastards down in the end. And that's what I hope we're seeing with the courts moving into Trumpdom recently. It's May 10th. This is an interesting day. It's National Clean Up Your Room Day, and it's also National Trust Your Intuition Day. So I ask you, what do you do if your intuition tells you not to clean up
exactly.
your room?
Exactly. That's just what I was thinking.
So, Kevin, are you cleaning your room today?
You know, I have a guest coming over this afternoon, so I'm cleaning up some of the house. So, my intuition says I better get to it.
Truman, are you cleaning your room?
No, you know what? I'm still trying to recover from this back injury, and to be perfectly honest, I'm barely walking, so I won't be doing much cleaning, I'm sorry to say. Yeah.
But you're maintaining your airplane, right?
I'm not even doing that. This has been a real bad one. So,
Really?
Yeah.
Your job is to stretch and not much more.
Yeah, I got it.
So Lynn, is your room clean?
Oh my God, I'm frantically searching for a library book that is overdue, and I know it was on my bedside table, and now it's not. So I'm cleaning up in one corner of my bedroom. The rest is all full of books and art supplies. And for me, it's my nest, and I don't want anybody telling me I have to clean up my room, but I must clean it up now and then when I lose somebody else's book.
It sounds like we should define clean.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, of course, you may be in luck.
Seattle cluttered, and then there's filthy. All,
So Seattle Library System has suspended all overdue book fines.
No, they're coming back. I just read that they're coming back. The fines are coming back. Yeah, that's why I'm frantic.
That's bad for me.
We're getting out of the pandemic. Yeah, Gail.
I was just going to say, I used to have a whole line item budget for overdue library fines. Notorious. It takes me forever because I just like to dive into books, and I usually read half a dozen at a time. So, you know, I'm switching around, and it was never long enough.
So, Gail, is your room clean?
Well, you know, I live in a little apartment in the attic of my house. It's about 350 square feet. And so I have to keep it pretty tidy because it takes about a minute for it to become overwhelming. But, you know, it's interesting that I have thought a lot about in the last few years, how much of our life actually is consumed by cooking, cleaning, shopping, laundry, dusting. If you get that to that last one, that seems to fall off the list kind of at the end. But, you know, let alone making our bed and just it's amazing how much energy it takes just to take care of these things. And it makes me realize that back in the day when women most often were the ones responsible for that and less often worked outside of the home, that was and still remained and still is a huge job. And we've kind of moved culturally to think it's just fine for women to also have another full-time job. And and then somehow magically all of that housework is getting done, but it isn't magic. And generally it's just another burden that falls often on women unequally. So shout out to, the guys out there that do their share. And Kevin, thoughts about that?
I was just going to take credit for the fact that in our household, the major cleaner upper is me, including after dinner. So
you get gold stars. Yeah. I was once a teacher and I'm authorized to pass out gold stars. And
I don't know I might need some coaching from others, you know, who haven't taken that step, but so far it's working out for me. Okay.
All right. Yay.
I always think, Gail, that's why we go on vacations. Let somebody else, you know, provide the food and the bed turned down and clean up and all of that. Because, you know, I just don't prioritize it very much. You know, I live by myself. And so I've now been in that house for 32 years, and it's time to just have a little arson there, I think.
That's a form of cleaning up, I guess.
Really?
I know the feeling.
Okay, as long as your insurance company doesn't hear you say that.
That's right.
You didn't hear me say that. No one
did. Not a thing.
No.
You can rent flamethrowers.
That's right. That's right.
There you go.
You're thinking about it.
Funny.
So what's happening in your particular neighborhood on Vashon? Kevin, you talked about this rally on May 14th. Do you want to expand on that a bit?
Well, let's see. It's there was a rally on last week as well. Champion Jenna Riggs for calling that, and for Sheila Brown, actually, Brian Brown's widow, to say that she was there, and there were five men, and she personally went and thanked every one of the men who showed up for the reproductive rights rally last week. So I just wanted to do a shout out there. Locally here, it's you know, we're seeing signs of spring. So some of those jobs that like painting, which have sort of been hibernating, waiting for the weather to warm up, that's been done. Mason bees, it's been a challenging year for mason bees. But we've been spending time cutting mason bees out of their cocoons. And if you've never done that, if you've never seen that, go look up cutting a bee out of mason bee out of a cocoon. You can probably find a video on YouTube.
You mean a little tiny cesarean section?
You know, it's, you know, the cocoons are about as big as a jelly belly. And you need really sharp scissors. And on one end of the cocoon is a little nub, and that's where the head of the bee is. And that nub gives you a chance to get purchase with the scissors, and they should be really sharp and really small. You essentially cut a line like you would open up a potato, a baked potato, and then you squeeze the ends. And if all goes well, a little bee crawls right out. And when they're nice and warm this time of year, like they were yesterday, oftentimes they'll fly right off and do their thing. But when it's cooler, you want to put them in a place where they can kind of get their wits about them. But it's a fascinating thing to do. If you've never done it, I highly recommend it. And if you've never seen it, check out the video. Find
Why
a video
do you do
watch.
It? Why in the world did you intervene with nature?
To let them out.
Because the bees are in a cocoon. They've been basically dormant for a long time. They have a certain amount of food that they have in the cocoon. And as they start to move around, what they should do is chew their way through the cocoon wall and out. But not every bee has enough endurance to actually get out. So I would say about 70% of the cocoons had been vacated. Really? And about 30%, then I was able to cut bees out. And some bees, you know, it's nature. So not all bees are going to make it. And so there was some of that. But it's always fascinating to see a live animal emerge from this little tiny jelly bean sized cocoon and then go off and to do their contribution to the world.
Truman, I have to say, Truman has a photo of a little, it looks exactly like a potato. The cocoon is dry and not fluffy and healthy looking with, It looks like more than one bee in there. So it's probably all its legs and all of that stuff squirming around trying to figure out how to get out. It's really pretty disgusting. It does. It looks like alien.
You have to realize that the bees don't have, I don't think mason bees have stingers, or at least they don't sting. I mean, they literally, they'll crawl out of the cocoon and walk up my arm, you know, and because it's warm.
Gross.
And you get the body heat. So yeah, it's pretty awesome. You have to be willing to be surrounded by bees, and mason bees are pretty safe to be surrounded by.
Neat. Well, I, down here on Sylvan Beach, had two fun wildlife sightings. Yesterday, we watched two sea lions mating, and wow, was it noisy, splashy, and were they ever, they clearly weren't fighting, and we couldn't see at all. A lot of this was, you know, underwater, but when they would come up, it was quite endearing. So that was pretty fun to watch, and I have been also watching, we have a bumblebee nest. It's a colony, I guess you would call it, bumblebees has taken up residence in one of our birdhouses, and so that's been really fun to watch them fly in and out, and wonderful to have them around the garden, even though garden's a little slow this year with so much cold weather and
terrible.
Continuing with this very March-like May, so mm-hmm. Yeah, a little weather weirding going on, I suspect.
Well, in Ellisport, we're hearing the Canada geese are coming back through, so that's always a good sign, you know, waking up in the morning, hearing them honking as they fly across the estuary, and so that's good. Lynn, how about you?
Oh, I've just been back there planting some grass, you know. I'm loving all of the rain. It's been perfect for me because I managed to get ahead of those rains, and, you know, with all the dirt that I've been throwing down in my yard trying to get some topsoil on it, I'm just happy for those rains, and it's great to be back outside again. I guess that's what I notice the most. You know, we've been kind of imprisoned in our little houses, and I've done walks and things, but to be outside getting to work in the yard and rake and hoe and really watch the progress of, you know, the unfolding ferns and all of that has just been wonderful. I've enjoyed that.
So let me ask you guys about the new COVID surge. You know, Vashon's quadrupled the number of cases per day over the last 2 weeks. So
grandma's disappeared.
Yeah, so what's up, guys? What do you think?
Stuff in mail.
Really? Okay, that's my grandson commenting on our comments.
Excellent.
Put him on the air. The next Brown Briefly.
Right.
More briefly is the better.
So, what's your response to the surge on Vashon?
Well, I'll jump in. You know, it's a real challenge. There's it's sort of on again, off again. The good news is masks can go on and off easily, and I'm actually looking to plan some backpacking trips. And this is related because when you think about going to the trailhead with other people in your car, you need to think about COVID. But also when you're out hiking this time of with the climate change we're seeing and the propensity for forest fires, you know, you probably ought to have an N95 mask in your pack just in case you encounter the wildfire smoke. So, yeah, I think the masks are going to come in handy for lots of reasons, and I plan to keep wearing mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I think, like I said, I guess a couple of weeks ago, I think we knew that we were at some risk of COVID surging back again the minute we declare it's over without consulting the COVID mutants and variants. So I think that, you know, we are all hoping that we have enough tools now to deal with COVID that we won't end up sicker in the hospitals. And I don't know. I'm like you, Kevin. I just keep my mask around, and anytime I'm around people or in an enclosed space, doesn't even have to be hugely crowded, I'll put my mask on because, you know, I saw they were looking now at who is it that's avoiding people. There's some statistics saying they think up to 75% of people have had COVID now, and that, you know, they're wondering what is going on with people that have not had COVID. And I just think, what do you mean beyond isolation and the mask and, you know, all the boosters and all of that? So I just tighten my standards for myself when, you know, I'm around a lot of people.
Anybody else? Any other comments? It's going to be an interesting thing to watch and see how, because Vashon's very heavily vaccinated, you know, 90, almost 95% vaccinated. Over age five, so it'll be interesting to see. And I mean, I know a number of people that have contracted it over the last month. All have had very minor, sort of, you know, 2 day kind of cold symptoms. You know, I don't know anybody that's had a severe COVID reaction, but I'm sure there some are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have one friend who's not had a real severe case, but he keeps testing positive, you know, and it's been a couple of weeks now. So I think that, you know, we're still learning what these variants are doing and how they're behaving. You know, we can't be assured that our vaccine's going to prevent it.
Right.
Yeah, my former sister-in-law just getting over about a week of it, and her son wanted to take her to the hospital. And in fact, they even called an aid car, and the aid car evaluated her and said, "No, we're not going to take you to the hospital because you're still breathing okay." She was feeling really bad, but her breathing was okay. So that was the trigger.
That was the criteria.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Interesting. Wow. Interesting. Evan.
Yeah, and I'll say that, you know, I've heard from some quarters about, you know, I think Lynn, you mentioned, you know, the vaccine's not a guarantee. Whether you're going to catch COVID or not catch COVID. But I think that the statistics are very overwhelmingly mm-hmm. showing that those who are not vaccinated who do contract COVID are at much more significant risk.
Absolutely.
For injury to their health and possible death and hospitalization and possible death. So I think it's wise to recognize that, yes, there is no guarantee that you'll not catch COVID other than maybe totally isolating yourself. But the consequences are dramatically different depending on whether you have or don't have the vaccine. And there may be some folks who will argue that the vaccine isn't that capable. But, you know, we keep hearing from the hospitals that's the data. unvaccinated people are much more likely to suffer severe consequences and death.
That's right. The only other thing that I'm hearing is that they are at the medical science level looking at whether they should be trying to develop another vaccine that more highly targets the B.A.2 variant that is so prevalent right now, and which is the one that seems to be able to get around some of the immunities that the other vaccines have provided. And that's not to say, Kevin, I completely agree with you. It's not to say that vaccines don't work. It's that the COVID variants keep changing and that we're constantly kind of playing catch up. And that's kind of what we have to do.
Which is not all that untypical of what we do with the seasonal flu.
Right.
We try and sort of guess what the next sort of wave is going to be. And sometimes they guess correctly, sometimes they don't. But they sort of are constantly modifying the flu vaccine to deal with variants. And so maybe what we're moving into with COVID, we're going to have to start engineering vaccines in a way that we in a predictable way to try and match what we're seeing coming out as variants. Yeah, Kevin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I always think of it as it's one of the classic risk management challenges, mm-hmm. right? So there's lots of ways to choose how to avoid getting COVID. Some are more effective than others, but the important thing is you can choose your method, be diligent about it. Vaccines put a lot less demand on isolation in the sense that you aren't going to catch severe illness based on the data that we have with us. So, but it's really a choice.
Yeah, just got a note from a friend who says what I've said all along, and that is these folks who are choosing not to get vaccinated are really the folks who are incubating these variants, I think. Mm-hmm. Those of us who are vaccinated and double boosted and all of that, I think we're going to be catching some of those variants that were not covered. But the folks who aren't vaccinated are the ones who are really propagating this the variants. So, the war's still on, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. And that's the old adage that I wear a mask, I get vaccinated, not so much for me, but for you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's sort of my community responsibility. Yeah, Gail.
I just wanted to say on a hopeful note, if spring does decide to arrive and we're able to be outside again more and gather in, in spaces that have lots of air movement and where we don't have to be so close together, I'm hopeful that we will at least have a reprieve from COVID for a few months, which happened last year. And I'm hopeful that that will happen.
Hope springs eternal, as they say. Yeah. So our Republican friends and colleagues and fellow citizens across the aisle have been ranting and raving for several decades now about activist judges rewriting the Constitution and sort of rewriting, sort of opinions. But we just saw a leaked Supreme Court decision. It's not final by any means yet, but sort of represents a massive shift in precedent against Roe versus Wade. How do we respond to these Republican friends about conservative activism in the judges?
Boy, that's a hard one.
Yeah, well.
I think the, oh, sorry, Trobin, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I believe that people who find themselves on the right side of the political aisle are in practice regularly this kind of double standard between what they say and what they expect, and then their own behavior, and it tends to be fairly hypocritical. And I think this is an example of that.
It's a kind way of putting it.
I think one of the biggest concerns are the larger implications of the fundamentalist view of, Roe v. Wade, of course, is huge, but there are a whole lot of other issues that are around the logic. And if they follow with that logic, it could be a real, Bruce can probably talk more astutely about that, but that's the part I think that's the more worrisome than even Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, I think for me, it's that, you know, whether or not we become a theocracy.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly that.
We allow religious beliefs to derive our political opinions. And the Constitution's very clear on that. And yet, many of these conservative judges who claim to be originalists seem to be able to overlook that concept of this fundamental conflict that emerges when you begin to make political rulings that reflect religious belief. And so it's going to be, I think, a fundamental strife in our culture that's going to emerge over the next year or two, depending on what the Supreme Court decision actually is. But if it does overturn Roe versus Wade, then it's going to be a real fight, both in legislatures nationally and on state levels, over whether or not these are constitutional sort of restrictions, or whether it's America becoming a theocracy.
Well, and the same folks that are proposing this view are the same ones who raise such a ruckus about Sharia law. I mean, they're saying, oh, well, that's Sharia law. You can't have that. Well, come on, folks. You know, I mean, you can't have it both ways. That's thinking anyway.
That's the very kind of hypocrisy I think of.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Kevin.
Oh, I'd jump in and say a couple things. There is the possibility that the leaked opinion will change by justices changing their vote. However, I give that a very, very low chance of happening. I think we are looking at a multi-decade, well-financed goal of conservatives in politics and industry to engineer this exact kind of change. Mm-hmm. And if you read Nancy MacLean's book, Democracy in Chains, which I mentioned multiple times on this show, I am a broken record on that. She goes through exactly the building up of conservative beliefs in law schools to create just exactly the kind of justices that we have on the court today. And their expectation and their strong belief systems that Roe is something that does need to be overturned. And then many of us, if not all of us, have seen the replay of when the justices are right going through their hearings, confirmation hearings, and talking about, no, Roe is settled law, and so we're not going to touch it. And then all of a sudden that changes. So I do definitely believe that there's a long-standing, long multi-generation, multi-decade push, you know, to get this outcome. I don't know how far it will go, but I think the risks are definitely there. So I think we should be aware of that. Another thing I'll say is that I thought it was quite interesting, this notion of when does life begin, and that there's some of that basis as part of the rationale to overturn Roe versus Wade. And it was pointed out that depending on your religion, life begins at different points. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden what we have is a court basically casting a ruling based on their perception of when life begins that are going to apply to other people of different religious denominations who have a completely different view. And here now we're imposing a religious view on the nation. So I don't like that either. Anyway, Lynn, it looks like you've got a thought.
Well, I agree with you 1,000% that this has a lot to do with the separation of church and state and the understanding of that kind of being blurred and makes some people unhappy. I think they want to go with what they consider to be Christian faiths and beliefs as sort of the rock, you know, the bedrock of our foundation. But that's not true for all parts of the country, you know, not to mention the different religions you're on. For me, I guess the part that I want to add is that I think the left has gone down the side of human rights, and the right has gone down the side of sort of codifying, you know, the corporate money-making machines, the banks, the kind of status quo with the patriarchy and all of that, and that there's been quite a war on some of the individual rights that have have been coming along. And, you know, women's context is just really, this can't be about logic, because look at what has happened with women. It took us till 1920 to get the vote. And before that, we were chattel. We were property that men could tell us, you know, what to do and make decisions for us, and couldn't sign contracts and all of that. And even after we got the vote, there was sort of this Jim Crow that related to women, in which even like taking a married name of your husband is part of the idea that you belong to your husband, that you become one being somehow religiously and state-wise. And, you know, birth control was illegal up until 1968 for single women. And, you know, it was even hard to get birth control if you were a married woman. And the thing that just galls me so badly is there's not one single equivalent health care or human rights aspect of this kind of reproductive right for men. If we said all men who don't want to marry their pregnant girlfriends must be castrated, I'm telling you, there would be a huge outroar against that. They'll say, no, that's a lifetime, you know, burden. And you know, I think, well, you know, women who can't have abortions and who are left to raise children they didn't want and maybe can't afford have a lifetime worth of, you know, suffering for that one decision that might not have been theirs in the beginning. There's huge amounts of rape and date rape and just pressure for women to have babies, whether or not it's in their best interest or not. And so for me, what I'm trying to say is that not only is this a religious issue, but it is part of the maintenance of the patriarchy, if you can forgive that 50-year-old word, of, you know, men's rights being dominant over women's rights. And I just think, for me, it's so illogical to go backwards in this regard as a healthcare decision being criminalized. I think that part of it is the most galling at all, that there are going to be criminal penalties in some states for this. Is just not only a double standard and hypocrisy, but it's outrageous. And it should be fought, I think, by, you know, any woman who values her life and her own rights.
Could we all say well said at this juncture? Thank you, Lynn.
Absolutely.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, Gail.
I'd just like to, Lynn, I couldn't agree with you more. And you hit on several things that strike me, particularly the idea that if we were imposing those kind of restrictions and life altering decisions on a man, this would not be happening. This would be absolutely shut down. The conversation would not even happen. But these decisions affect and are imposing burdens on mostly young, poor women.
That's right.
They are the least able to stand up for themselves, the least able to raise these children. And for me, one of the hypocrisies that I just find the most difficult to deal with is that then on the right, they want to take away, you know, education opportunities, support for children. You know, we have difficulty having simple things like healthcare for, you know, carrying on about this fetus and the importance of life. And yet, as soon as that child is on the other side of the birth canal, we abandon it. So for me, that is, it's wrong on many levels, but primarily in this case, I just don't like the fact that it's an imposition to the most vulnerable women, poor women in particular.
And thank you all. I want to thank you, Gail, for raising that other kind of socioeconomic issue. But thanks to all of you guys here in the studio and those who can tolerate listening to an angry woman, you know, which is not okay in our culture. Yeah. It's not okay to be outraged. And so thank you for all of you for listening and trying to understand our positions.
May 14th, 10 to noon, 4-way stop, Vashon Island. We'll see you there.
There you go.
So Truman, I know your conservative friends that you grew up with and are in touch with have gone silent on a lot of issues. Have they responded at all to this Alito leak, or is it just...
No, they're mostly... I just spent 3 days with some of my most conservative friends out in Montana, And we had a little, very small discussion about the whole abortion issue. And I just said, I don't think it's the government's. I mean, I don't want to, from a Republican point of view, I don't want to be responsible for that child that that woman does not want. Because that's basically what we're saying. We're saying that you're going to have that child, and if you don't want it, then guess what? We're responsible for it. And that's a very anti-Republican view of my view. But they said, well, what about adoption? And I said, man, how many adoptions do you know that have come out well? There are a few, but I have many friends who have adopted kids who have had nothing but problems with their families. But the kids and the kids themselves, I feel bad for them, but it just has not worked out well. And so why in the world would we burden, ourselves with that burden? I mean, it just does not make sense, even from a Republican point of view. So
Truman, it looks like we're down near the end. So we have, how much time do we got? 30 seconds?
Seconds, yes, sir.
All right. This has been a great discussion. And thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Gail, for bringing your perspectives to this discussion. And Kevin, Truman, myself, we're 100% behind you. You know that. So
thank you, guys.
Thank you.
So for Gail, for Lynn, for Kevin, for Truman, I'm Bruce Hallman. We'll see you next week when Gail Kellner will host the next edition of The Brown Briefly. So thank you all.
See you all next week.